Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have a fantastic interview with US fiction author Jo Bell, and you'll hear that great chat we had in just a few minutes. After we've done our usual rundown of what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in with what I've been up to over the last month and what's been happening in the world of lesfic. First up, the Amazon charts, and this month sees a very familiar name at the top in the UK, very familiar to me anyway, because it's me, hooray! I'm very thrilled to say that my new novel, Nothing to Lose, came out this week, and it's currently sitting on top of the lesbian chart, so thank you very much if you bought it, much appreciated. It's the story of Scarlett Williams, who's given 30 seconds to get out of her flat before it's flooded. And she ends up on the doorstep of Mayor Joy Hudson. And her and Joy are polar opposites, but Joy takes her in, and the book is the story of how they overcome struggles and help each other, really, to be the best version of themselves. And they might find a little bit of romance along the way, because it is a lesbian romance, after all. But, you know, read the book and find out exactly what happens with them. So I'm really thrilled to be at number one in the UK. So that's all brilliant. In number one in the US. Now this is really weird, right? Is a book by the lovely Rachel Maldonado, and her story is called Burning Desire. Now this is a story of a woman whose house is burning down, and she has to get out, and she's taken in by a firefighter, and they may or may not find romance. Now, isn't that weird? There's me in London writing a story of a woman who's made homeless by a flood and taken in by a local mayor, and Rachel Maldonado, who lives all the way over in America, and we've never spoken, and she's written a book about a woman who's made homeless by a fire and is taken in by a local firefighter, and they may or may not find romance. Now it's just weird, isn't it? But it's kind of weird, but then again it's kind of not, because I believe in the power of big magic. I'm just at the moment reading a book by Elizabeth Gilbert, and it's called Big Magic, and it's about creative living, and it's really cool. I really recommend the book. It's inspirational, but also realistic about the about how you do live a creative life and all its ups and downs, highs and lows. But Elizabeth Gilbert was saying that in her book, that ideas kind of circle all at the same time. So I'm in London and Rachel's in America, but we had a similar-ish idea. I mean, not exactly the same idea. And even if I'd written a book about a house burning down, it wouldn't have been the same book, right? Because I'd have written it differently to Rachel. But we had this a disaster idea, and we grasped it because the idea circled us and we took it. And Elizabeth Gilbert says in her book that, you know, you can take these ideas or you can ignore them, or you can come back to them later, but you might find that the magic's gone out of them if you come back to them later. And I think I've definitely had that with books I've started and I've gone back to and thought, oh, I'm not sure I'm feeling this anymore. So yes, and also in the top five as well is Jay's new book, Shaken to the Core, which is about an earthquake in San Francisco and has two women from opposite sides of the track hanging on for dear life as their world is shaken up around them. So disaster romances. It's clearly the new in thing, and I am happy that I finally hit a zeitgeist. I don't know if you remember a few episodes ago I was talking about there's a rash of medical dramas in the charts, and clearly that was the same thing, right? There's a lot of medical ideas going around, writers grasp them and they all rate it, and it kind of makes sense because you often hear, like, for instance, there's a case going on at the moment about music and people stealing each other's intros. I mean, you hear this all the time in the news, and people say, oh, they stole my intro. I guess if it's a little bit different if there's like 30 years in between. But you quite often hear stories of people coming out with similar-ish premises for books. So it all lends credence to the fact that big ideas float around at the same time, and writers take them and then make them their own. So disaster romance is clearly a thing at the moment, and I'm happy to be in on it. Also doing well in the charts on both sides of the pond is the unstoppable Harper Bliss with her new book, The Road to You. There's a fabulous cover on this one. As always, Harper and her wife Caroline do a great job on the covers, and Harper does a very good job on the books too. And the blurb describes this one as a deliciously slow-burning romance. Now, deliciously slow-burning, that's a great, great phrase there. And if that's not enough to make you want to put this book in the middle of a burger bun and scoff it down for dinner, I don't know what is, frankly. So, yes, getting a bit excited, aren't I? Also doing well is Eliza Lensky with her popular series Winter Jacket. And this one is the denouement of the series, the final one, and it's called Winter Jacket All In. So if you haven't grabbed a copy of that and you want to know what happens in the final chapter of Eliza's four-part series, then grab that one. And also doing well in the charts on both sides of the pond is Lydia Rose with her new one, There Is Just Something About You. So clearly Lydia was listening to Level 42 when she came up with that title, or perhaps that's just me with my music-obsessed brain, and Lydia has no idea who Level 42 are. It's quite possible. It's just words in a line, isn't it? So that's the charts. What's been happening in the world since we last met? Well, award season. We are into award season, and the Lambda Literary Awards just happened this month. The Lammies, as they're called to their friends. And there were some notable winners in lesbian fiction. So I will just pop over to the Lambda website and let you know who they are. So best lesbian fiction title went to Chinelo Ocparanta with her book Under the Udala Trees. So well done, Chinelo. Best lesbian romance. Best lesbian romance went to Julie Blair with her book Making a Comeback. So good work there, Julie. Best lesbian mystery, two winners for this one. Anne Aptke, one with her book Tarnished Gold, and Victoria Brownworth with her book Ordinary Mayhem. So well done, Victoria and Anne. Let's see. And there was also best lesbian erotica that went to Megan O'Brien with her book The Muse. And there was also a lesbian poetry book. Now, where has that one gone? Oh, there it is. Dawn Lundy Martin with her book Life in a Box is a Pretty Life. And I really like that title. So well done, Dawn. And finally, Kate Carol de Gutes with her book Objects in Mirrors Are Closer Than They Appear. Very nice poetic title there as well. So that is the Lammies. Well done to all the winners. Looking forward to the Golden Crown Literary Awards next month, which I will report back on. And they feature a bunch of old podcast guests up for awards. So good luck to Fletcher Delancey, Lee Winter and Carrie Hunter, to name but a few. And good luck to everyone who's nominated. I hope this year is your year. And final thing on the awards, the Rainbow Awards, run by the tireless Elisa Rolle, are doing a shout out for submissions. So if you're an author and you have a book you want to submit, now's the time. Google Rainbow Awards in Google, and you'll come up with the website. It's pretty well known. So what have I been up to since we last met? Well, I have been busy putting the finishing touches to my new novel, Nothing to Lose, which, as I said earlier, is out now. I really enjoyed writing this one. It was a very emotional journey because even though the book touches on a lot of stuff that's with a disaster, it touches on a lot of stuff that's common to the human experience. Overcoming adversity, facing your demons, falling in love. So if you love all those things, you should love the book. So I hope you read it and enjoy it. I'm really pleased with the cover on this one as well, because a different designer had to step in when my normal designer couldn't do this one, so I'm really pleased that she did a great job. And I hope you read it and enjoy it and let me know what you think. And in the meantime, I'm also working on the next installment of my All I Want series, All I Want for Summer, which is due out in July. The cover for that one is already done by my fabulous friend Kevin. And yeah, I'm kind of halfway through writing that one, so that should be all on schedule and due out in July for the next adventures of Tori and Holly. And I'm trying to get in the summer mood, although the weather in the UK isn't very summery right now. In fact, it's darn right rainy, and I'm frankly bored of it. but I'm going away to Spain in July, so I'm looking forward to that, because Spain is always sunny, isn't it? Let's hope so. Anyway, that's enough about me and everything else. Let's get straight over to the fantastic Dave Bell and the great interview we had. Hope you enjoy. So joining me today is US author Jove Bell, who's released a slew of novels, novellas and short stories, including The Job, Cake, Uncommon Romance and Love and Devotion. She's also one of the founders of the major lesbian fiction blog Women and Words. She's a podcaster and lives in Portland with her partner Tara and Tribe of Kids and Animals. So welcome, Jove.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Really good to have you. And how are you today? Have you been up to anything exciting?
No, I'm really good, but my excitement has been limited to sitting at my desk working.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful day outside. I can see through the window, and it makes me sad because I'd much rather be outside riding my bike than sitting at my desk.
But what
things we do.
But work calls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is the case.
So what is it you can see from your window then? Some lovely sunshine. Paint the picture.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. Well, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, and for those who've never been to this part of the country or to this part of the world, rather, it is full of it's probably some of the most wonderful scenery in the world because it's full of just green, and my neighborhood is. I live in a neighborhood that's full of old growth evergreen trees. And so looking out my window, I can see all these beautiful trees. And then beyond that, just this perfect blue sky with little spots of puffy clouds everywhere. It's gorgeous.
All right.
It's just about perfect.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So tell me a little bit then about your writing journey and how you got started.
Oh, you know... I always thought that, you know, I was one of those people who thought, well, one day I'll write a book. And I didn't have any, like, expectation or plan for that. I just, you know, it was something that was in the back of my head. Oh, eventually I'll do this. It's on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at work, and a work friend of mine brought in a book that she had written. And it was in a three-ring binder. Just, she wrote this book and printed it up, and here it was in this binder. And I went, what? People can do that. They can just like sit down and write a book and then print it out. Like that's a thing. So yeah, I wrote a book because my friend wrote a book, and I figured, well, that just means that I have permission now.
Okay.
And I haven't stopped.
And when was that? When was that your friend inspired you to start writing?
Maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
I was in my mid-30s.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I want to say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you just decided to write a book, and did that one ever see the light of day, or
Oh, the first book I wrote is no. it's not safe for public consumption. It was like the little book that could. I had a lot of like big hopes and a lot of really bad habits because I hadn't learned anything about writing yet.
Yeah.
But I submitted that book to Bold Strokes, and they emailed me back and they said, you know what? Wow, but no thanks. Can you tell us what you're working on now? And at that point I was working on Edge of Darkness, and they asked for some details on it, and they corrected it based on the synopsis that I sent in. So that was really cool.
Okay.
I learned a lot.
Right.
Through that process.
So it was a good stepping stone into your next...
Absolutely.
Yeah, your next book. So you got your first books published back in 2008. So as you said, Edge of Darkness, which is the hard-hitting one, right?
Yeah, it's all about like this angry serial killer chick.
Right.
Who is, killing people.
Right.
So yeah. It's pretty dark.
Where did that one bubble up from?
My friend Tara Wentz had this writing contest online, And it wasn't anything big. It was just like one of those little prompt challenge things, and it was, you know, write about the weather. And so I had this image of this woman standing out in the rain, you know, with her head down in the middle of the night with this sword in her hand. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote that image. And then, you know, as writers are wont to do, I started asking questions about this character and what was she doing and why was she in the rain and what was she doing with the sword. And that's where Edge of Darkness came from.
Okay.
So.
Your next one was Split the Aces, is that right? And that was more a romance set in the bright lights of Vegas. So you went from a sort of hard hitting murder, spousal abuse, politics to more of a romance.
Yeah. Now there was no connection between those two at all. Like I was sitting in Las Vegas in a conference in a work thing, and bored out of my mind, and I sat there in the middle of the conference and I plotted out this novel, and it turned into Split the Aces, and it was a lot of fun to write. It's just a farce. It's, you know, sex in Las Vegas.
What's not to like?
Exactly.
Did they go to the Bellagio for brunch as well?
In the book, no.
No.
I didn't name any of the casinos in the book.
Okay. So did you have to go back to Vegas, or did you, you know, do a bit more research, or did you do it all from remote?
Oh, I've been to Vegas so many times.
Okay.
Too many times.
Okay.
have you ever been?
I have. I'm a fan. I've been a couple of times, but I guess, yeah, you're a bit closer. So I know I've got a family in Canada, and they go all the time, so... I would like to go more, but it's a bit of a plane ride for us.
A little bit.
Yeah, but I did the first time I ever went to Vegas. I was there with my girlfriend, and we went to this some sort of party in New York hotel, and it was we gate crashed a conference, and we got free booze all night. So we like conferences in Vegas. So I like,
you know, every time I had to go to a conference in Vegas, I was always away from my family. And so, you know, because we went all the time for work, and it was probably not my favorite thing to do. Because I, you know, given my choice between being with Tara anywhere on the planet and being without her in Vegas, mm-hmm. I take Tara every time. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. So, and then your last novel, The Job, that was a really big hit. So tell me a bit about that and why you think that struck a chord.
You know, The Job was about an undercover FBI agent who was working as part of an investigation into a domestic terrorist cell. And she ends up in the middle of this bank job, which isn't really a bank job. It's more a terrorist act. But so anyway, it's about her and how she, the main character. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
Come back to it. Yeah.
She's just there investigating these people and trying to survive this day. Like, this book, you know, about 90% of it takes place, you know, that day in the bank. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think the reason that it did so well, frankly, is the cover, because that cover is super hot.
Right.
So that's where I'm going to give credit to.
Not the book at all, the cover.
The book was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed writing it.
Yeah. That was one of the things I was going to ask you, actually, because I think all your books have quite striking covers, and they're very colourful. They've got a lot of impact. Is this something you're set to continue now? Where now you've switched publishers?
Well, I hope so. I have. Well, you've seen the cover for Cake, right?
Yeah,
that was with Ilva. I like that cover a lot.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of input on the covers? That's what I mean.
Well, with Ilva, they are so generous when it comes to covers. I actually have made covers for them. So, like, the cover for Cake, I created that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's quite a lot of input, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. So you think that's the reason it hit a chord, was the cover?
Yeah, well, and I think the topic.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about domestic terrorism at a time when that's kind of just, you know, that's been a hot button topic for us for the last, you know, 15 years, ever since 9/11. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, Americans are just sort of confused and dumbfounded and awed about the whole idea of terrorism and what that means and how we've managed to cultivate such disdain from other groups, you know, other people on that planet.
Yeah.
And it's something that we always, you know, it gets our attention.
Yeah.
So, and you know, this was the first book, Hijab was the first book that I wrote that didn't include any sex scenes at all. Because really, how do you include sex scenes in a book about a terrorist strike in a bank? Like, how do you do that? You know, you can't. But I still, I had, you know, some reviewers who were very unhappy with me because I didn't include any sex scenes for them.
Yeah. Bit of a cardinal sin.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And I was going to say, because you've written erotica and political and shorter romances, do you have a favourite thing to write?
No.
No, you just like not jumping around?
Yeah, well, I love romance because I think romance is the one universal that I don't care what your other beliefs are. If you don't believe in romance, then that's a really, really sad thing. Like, we're all looking for that. We're all looking for some sort of connection to another person. We want to find our match.
Mm-hmm.
So I adore romance. But mostly I write whatever is in me at the moment to write. And that makes things a little bit more difficult, I think, because there's not like this one unifying thread in my writing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I write suspense, sometimes I write romance, sometimes I write erotica.
Yeah.
But it's what I do.
Yeah. You're versatile. You're a versatile woman.
Yeah.
And I read Cake in the run-up to this interview and really enjoyed it. It's about a woman whose girlfriend leaves her for a man and she goes to his wedding and winds up getting together with the groom's sister. And they get it on at the reception. I'm taking that is not from a true life inspiration. But one of the things when I was reading... the reviews on Amazon, one thing that struck me, and as you said, is that the readers seem to really like your sex scenes. And I know that, you know, as you say, sex scenes is something that people like to read. Do you find them easy to write?
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, they're not something that I struggle with at all.
Okay.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, do you have a system?
No. I a lot of people really struggle with sex scenes, and I will say that the one part that I do struggle with, it's not writing them, because I just sit down and I think, you know, just like any other scene, okay, now what happens? And I just try and think about it in as much detail as possible and write it down, just like I would any other scene. But the part that makes them maybe a little bit harder than they need to be is that sex scenes are the one thing that people automatically assume must be, you know, a true representation of who you are. Like, if you write a sex scene about, you know, a woman who only has threesomes and always wants a goat in the room, they assume that that's your particular kink as the author.
Mm.
And so that bothers me. Nobody has ever once asked me if I was a serial killer, even though I've written about a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody makes that assumption. But with erotica, they always make the assumption that, you know, that must be something that, as the author, that's my thing. And so I don't like that. That makes me feel a little uncomfortable. But I just, when I'm writing, I try not to think about it.
Yeah. It's best not to, I find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
No, I know what you mean. Although I think everybody always thinks that, you know, everything I write is autobiographical. And, I, you know, it's really not. But, yeah, I think people think what they want to think, don't they? But there you go. And you, as with Cake, it's the first in the Bitterroot saga. Now, series are very on trend at the moment, so well done for the series thing. And what's coming up in the series? What can we expect next?
The next book, Bitterroot, is a small, very small fictional town of my own creation, located in the Bitterroot Mountains, at the base of the Bitterroot Mountains in Idaho. And so I wanted to create this little small, because I love small towns. Small towns make me really, really happy. So I wanted to create this little small town, and I put it in Idaho because for those who aren't familiar with Idaho, it is one of the most conservative places you will ever hope to go.
Okay.
You know, during like presidential elections, the voter turnout usually ends up somewhere in the high 90s for the Republican Party.
Like,
okay. It's a very conservative place. That's where I grew up.
Right.
And so I created this little town in the mountains that is just full of lesbians, because that's how it works when you're in a really conservative place like that. When lesbians find out that other lesbians are someplace, they go there, and so you end up with this little pocket of lesbian happiness in the middle of otherwise conservative, life.
I like the sound of a pocket of lesbian happiness. I like the sound of that.
I think everybody needs one of those. Just a little pocket.
Exactly.
So the next book is called Bitterroot Queen, and it is about a woman who buys a roadside motel, and she buys it off of the internet without actually visiting the town. When she gets there, she discovers that the place has just been destroyed by the local teenagers, and it's in an awful state of disrepair. And it's about her fixing it and making it, you know, a viable business. And the other main character is a Romani character who's, you know, doing what Romanis do, which is roaming the country in her vehicle, and she gets hooked up with the hotel owner, and away they go. That's the book.
Okay.
There's more that happens than just that.
Yeah, sounds good. Is it a shorter one again, as Cake was?
Oh gosh, no.
Okay.
I think I'm going to be really lucky if I can finish it in around 100,000 words.
Okay, not short.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's a lot bigger.
Yeah, and how many in the series do you think? Have you got a few more plotted out?
Oh yeah, I've got a bunch.
Okay.
At least six more ahead, ready to go.
How many more?
It's just finding time. At least six.
Oh, okay. Wow. So it's going to be a long running series.
I hope so. I hope that people like it enough to justify, you know, spending that much time and energy on it, because you know that sales determines a lot when you're talking about publishing.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't determine that much when you're talking about writing, but publishing as a business sure does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So describe to me your writing process these days. Do you write better a certain time of day or in a certain place?
I typically write in my office.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'm on my laptop upstairs with my family. The one thing that I find really helps me is if I have music, like at my headset with music, so that I can't hear all the other noises and distractions of life. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, my house is very full and very noisy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my one big thing. And as far as what time of day, no. Sometimes I write first thing in the morning. Sometimes I write last thing at night. I don't have any, like, writing habits. I'm terribly scattered about it, frankly.
Okay.
So it's amazing I ever managed to finish a book.
It's good to hear. It's good to hear, because I think I'm a little bit scattered about it as well. And, you know, so it's good to hear I've got a, you know, a compatriot in my scatteredness.
There you go.
Yeah, and do you have a daily workout that you have to hit, or do you take days off, or?
I take days off. I take weeks off. I take months off.
Okay.
You know, when I'm up against a deadline, that seems to be the only time that I have like any kind of serious like workout goals.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, I just sort of let the writing guide me.
Okay.
So, and when I do have goals, it's not usually actually word count. It's more like I'm going to write this scene.
Okay.
I'll write this far in this book. Like, I'll have a specific image that I want to get down, and then I'll get it down, and then I'll let myself have a break.
Yeah. Okay. So, and apart from writing the books, you do a great deal of other stuff writing related. So first up, how I first became aware of you, you're part of the team that runs the Women in Words blog, which is a huge blog dedicated to lesbian fiction. So tell listeners who are unaware of this a little bit about the blog and how it got started.
Yeah, so Women in Words was this, I wanted a place where people from authors, lesbian authors from different places in life, so people who are with different publishers and different world experiences, worldviews, could just, you know, go to the same place and hang out and have it not be weird. Like, I just wanted this really open, inviting environment where everybody could do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea with of having a group blog, so that there's always something interesting and different content.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted my friend Andy and I said, I have this idea. Let's see if we can make this happen. And, you know, the early days of Women in Words, it was very, very different from what it is now, but it's just sort of rolled into this bigger thing and evolved. And now we have a very long list of regular contributors. I want to say it's like 12 or 15 or so.
Mm-hmm.
People who contribute on a regular schedule. And then we have times that are dedicated to guest blogs, and we give away an awful lot of stuff, and we share things like calls for submissions and, you know, people who have, you know, free short stories on their website. We have a listing for that. We keep track of new releases releases that are coming up for the next month. We try really hard to just be as open as possible for people. So, you know, if you're a new indie author, or if you're somebody who's been writing lesbian fiction for 20 years, they're both welcome and invited to come and do a guest blog with us.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've done a few guest blogs with you guys, and I've always found you to be very welcoming. So yeah, and it's great. It's a great service for writers, but also for readers as well, because I find out new books there. I'm a reader too, so I find out about new books, and you give a lot of content away, especially at Christmas, which is very exciting. Your Christmas countdown.
Yeah, our Hootenanny. So yeah, we started that a few years ago, and as with just about everything that has to do with Women in Words, the process goes something like this. I, you know, call up Andy or I send her an email and I say, I'm thinking about doing this thing. What do you think? And 9 times out of 10, she like will grab me and redirect me and point me down the road the right direction. She'll ask a lot of questions like, yeah, are you sure you haven't just lost your mind a little bit? And the Hootenanny is one of those things that made it past the Andy filter.
Okay.
she's the one that keeps me focused.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we do 12 days leading up to Christmas, and it's a holiday giveaway. We try not to make it Christmas specific, but I am Christian, so I refer to it. I'm not Christian, I'm American. That's probably a better way to,
yeah,
the nondescript American who, you know, celebrates Christmas with her family.
But
we give away a whole bunch of books every day, and it's this huge monster of an event.
Yeah.
This past year, we gave away not only the books, but we also give away 3 Kindle Fires and some bunch of t-shirts and a whole bunch of stuff. It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure it involves a lot of work. And you also do a podcast called Badass Women Save Themselves. So do you consider yourself a badass?
No, but I would like to. I admire badass women. And I do enjoy talking about them. Yeah, I do that podcast with my friend Blythe Ripping, mm-hmm. who is just so nice and so smart. And I think that just being able to hang out and chat with her makes me, like, smarter by association.
Right.
So it makes me really happy. And we just talk about, you know, feminist representation in pop culture. Okay. So it's a lot of fun.
It's always nice when you find a friend like that. He makes you seem smarter. I like those friends. And I'm sure we're all on Hillary Clinton's side, aren't we, to be the badass woman, the ultimate badass woman in American politics. So go Hillary.
Well, that would be really nice.
It would be.
You know, we've had history is in the making right now, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And you're also an editor and U.S. Operations Director for ILVA, as well as writing with them. So how does that fit in with your writing role? Is that sort of, do you do that half and half, or is that more of your time?
I definitely spend more time editing than I do writing because it takes more time.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy editing. It feeds that same creative part of my brain. And I really, really enjoy taking new authors and teaching them some of the rules, some of the standards of good writing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay.
And as far as the operations director stuff, that takes up more time.
Okay.
That's other stuff entirely.
Yeah. It sounds good, though. It sounds like a, you know, very sort of official title, so I like it.
I know, it sounds super fancy, doesn't it?
It does, it really does,
like,
yeah.
I'm in charge of something.
You are
cool.
In charge of America.
Yeah, yeah, literally, like the whole country. It's a big area.
Yeah.
You know? I'm amazed they trust me with it, frankly. But,
yeah.
You know, that's all right.
Okay. And are you an editor for hire as well, or do you just edit for ILVA?
I've done some stuff on the side, freelance, not a ton, not because I don't want to do it, but just simply because I don't have time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, editing is a massive time commitment, and in our little niche of the world, I don't charge, like, as much as I would in a different part of the world, just simply because I'm really, really, this is what I prefer to edit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't normally have time. Okay. I like to.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah.
If you could clone yourself, yeah. Maybe, yeah.
If I could claim myself?
Clone myself. Clone.
No, that would be terrifying. One of me is hard to touch. That would get me divorced.
All right, then we don't want that. I don't be responsible for that, so we'll skip that one. So,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Are you an avid reader of Les Fick yourself?
You know, I don't get to read nearly as much as I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
I love to read,
mm-hmm.
And you know, but it's you know, the last few books that I've read have all been books that I've edited. You know,
right. Yeah.
I'm really glad that I liked them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't get to read nearly as much as I want to.
Yeah, no, I think that's a common thing, right? I think I'm the same too. And what's the next title we can expect from you, and when will that be?
Bitterroot Queen is next.
Okay.
And it will... Oh, no, wait, that's not true. Sorry.
Okay.
I wrote another novella, and it's called Archer Securities. And it's part of a collection of stories called The Law Game. And it's about 30,000 words, and it'll be out in August.
Okay.
So, and it's about this chick who's like a hacker. She's a hacktivist, and she funnels money away from companies that she believes are unethical.
Mm-hmm.
And filters it to people who need it, like, you know, she'll help pay off mortgages and things like that.
Right, okay.
And it's about the investigation into trying to find out who she is. And yeah, so that's what it is. It's
okay.
Fun.
Cool. That sounds great. Hacktivist. I like that word. That's a great word.
And
final question. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Oh, goodness. Willa Cather. Because yeah. She was just this cool old school lesbian who grew up in the middle of nowhere and became the person that she wanted to be, and she didn't let anybody else influence that. Mm-hmm. And maybe like J.K. Rowling, just because she is, like, in my opinion, like the gold standard for how human beings should behave. So
she's badass. Like
she is a total badass. And you know, one of my favorite things about her is that, you know, she fully acknowledges that before she made it big, she was on, you know, public assistance. She was on, I don't know what the UK equivalent of welfare is, but she was on
benefits.
And
yeah.
Now she has tons of money and she refuses to move it out of the country because she's very happy to pay the taxes on it. Mm-hmm. You know, she got herself taxed out of, you know, billionaire status, which just fabulous. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you not love somebody like that?
So, yeah.
Yeah, those are my two.
Good choices.
I don't know
choices.
How they're going to make a baby together, but I'm sure they'd figure it out.
They have a lot of fun trying. And yeah. Great. Well, that's terrific. And where can people find out more about you?
Oh, they can go to my website, which, you know, is it's got a difficult name to remember. It's joevel.com. Yeah.
Okay. So that's J-O-V-E.
J-O-V-E.
Yep, go on.
J-O-V-E-B-E-L-L-E.com.
There you go, joevel.com.
It's cryptic.
Yeah. Took you a long time to come up with that one.
It did. It was really hard.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by today, Jave. It's been fantastic to chat with you, and I look forward to seeing more of your books and more of your blogs as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. This has been lovely. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to find out anything more about me and my novels, including my brand new novel, Nothing to Lose, the All I Want series, the London series, or my standalone, The Long Weekend, then head on over to my website, which is at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or you can find me on Twitter, at Claire Lydon, or you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/claire.lydon. Very cryptic, all my stuff, isn't it? Thank you so much as well to Denise for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated. And if you want to catch up on all the latest LGBT news, views and gossip, make sure you tune into the Lesbian Lounge for more with Denise. In the meantime, thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next month with more Lesbian Book Club action, where I will be interviewing J.A. Armstrong, a.k.a. Nancy Healy. See you then.